A logo appears. A snowy, pyramid-shaped mountain stands under a cloud-strewn sky in the distance. Stars form an arch around the peak. White words appear as the mountain fades to a silhouette. Paramount, a Gulf and Western company. A full moon illuminates a thick layer of clouds. Words appear. Paramount Pictures presents a Howard W. Koch production. Only the back fin of an airplane is visible as it moves back and forth above the clouds. The airplane ascends, nose first, out of the clouds at us. A title appears: Airplane. An airplane comes into view on a dark night. City lights shine in the distance as its headlights illuminate the runway during its landing. Starring Robert Hayes, Julie Haggerty. Traffic moves through a loading zone of an airport. Headlights are bright against the night as cars and buses weave in and out of the congested loading zone. Costume designer Rosanna Norton.
The white zone is for immediate loading and unloading of passengers only. There is no stopping in the red zone.
A blue van pulls in.
The white zone is for immediate loading and unloading of passengers only. There is no stopping in the red zone.
Flight attendants exit the van.
The white zone is for immediate loading and unloading of passengers only. There is no stopping in the red zone.
The white zone is for immediate loading and unloading of passengers only. There is no stopping in the red zone.
A ponytailed flight attendant enters the airport.
Hello. We'd like you to have this flower from the Religious Consciousness Church. Would you care to make a donation?
No, but thank you anyway.
She takes the flower from the disheartened man.
The red zone is for immediate loading and unloading of passengers only. There is no stopping in the white zone.
No, the white zone is for loading and unloading. There is no stopping in the red zone.
Two men say their goodbyes.
The red zone has always been for loading and unloading. There's never stopping in a white zone.
Don't tell me which zone is for stopping and which zone is for loading.
Listen, Betty, don't start up with your white zone shit again.
A woman approaches two monks in pink robes as they enter.
Hello, we'd like you to have this flower from the Church of Religious Consciousness. Would you like to make a donation?
No thanks, we gave it the office.
A woman nods at people walking through security. A monitor behind her shows x-rays of bags. Each one contains dangerous tools, and then it displays a human torso.
Would you put all your metal objects into this dish, please?
A man sets his keys in a small dish. He then takes off a prosthetic metal arm and metal leg. Meanwhile, in the loading zone.
There's just no stopping in a white zone.
Oh, really, Vernon? Why pretend? We both know perfectly well what it is you're talking about. You want me to have an abortion.
It's really the only sensible thing to do. If it's done properly, therapeutically, there's no danger involved.
Taxi!
A man with thick black-rimmed glasses hails a taxi as it pulls up onto the curb. The driver, in a brown leather jacket, rushes out of the car.
I'll be back in a minute.
He pulls down a lever in the front seat to start the meter before running into the airport. The man gives a puzzled look from the back seat.
Hello, sir. We'd like you to have this flower on behalf of the church.
As a man pins a flower to his jacket, the driver strips it off, leaving it in his hands. An airplane slowly rolls on a dark runway. A runway marshal waves two pink glowing wands, indicating for the plane to move left.
Hey, Larry, where's the forklift?
Forklift! It's over there by the baggage loader!
Larry waves his wands in the opposite direction to direct a worker. He looks up wide-eyed as the plane crashes through the waiting area of a terminal. As people scramble out of the way, a woman tosses her baby in the air. The taxi driver runs through an airport hallway toward the ponytailed flight attendant.
Elaine!
Ted!
She spins towards him.
I came home early and found your note. I guess you meant for me to read it later. Elaine, I've got to talk to you.
I just don't want to go over it anymore.
I know things haven't been right for a long time, but it'll be different. Like it was in the beginning. If you'll just be patient, I can work things out.
I have been patient, and I've tried to help, but you wouldn't even let me do that.
Don't you feel anything for me at all anymore?
It takes so many things to make love last. Most of all, it takes respect. And I can't live with the man I don't respect.
Elaine storms away from him. Ted looks at us.
What a pisser.
A pilot in full uniform browses the whacking material section of a magazine stand. He grabs one titled Modern Sperm and starts to leaf through it.
Captain over, white courtesy phone. Captain Clarence over, white courtesy phone.
Looking up in response to the PA, he sets down the magazine and moves towards the courtesy phones.
No, the white phone.
Oh.
He sets down a red phone and picks up a white one.
This is Captain over.
One moment for your call from the Mayo Clinic.
Captain over, white courtesy phone. Captain Clarence over.
I've got it.
Thank you.
Go ahead with your call.
This is Dr. Brody at the Mayo Clinic.
There's a passenger on your Chicago flight 209er, a little girl named Lisa Davis, en route to Minneapolis. She's scheduled for a heart transplant. We'd like you to tell her mother that we found a donor an hour ago.
We have the heart here, ready for surgery. We must have the recipient on the operating table within 6 hours.
As Dr. Brody speaks, a human heart pumps and jumps on his desk.
A continuous watch is kept on her IV. Also,
it's very important that she remain calm.
Excuse me, this is the operator, Captain Over. I have an emergency call for you on line 5 from a Mr. Ham.
All right, give me Ham on 5. Hold the mail.
An ambulance speeds onto the runway and parks next to an airplane. A male flight attendant walks down the airplane stairs to greet them. Two men dressed in white open the back. A woman in a white blazer steps out, and they pull out a child laying on a gurney. Ted continues to follow Elaine through the airport.
You'll be back in town tomorrow night. We'll have dinner. We'll talk things over.
I won't be back. I've requested the Atlanta run.
Elaine.
They stop.
I promise I can change.
Then why didn't you take the job that Louis Netz offered you at Boeing?
He averts his gaze.
You know, I haven't been able to get near a plane since the war. Even if I could, they wouldn't hire me because of my war record.
Your war record? You're the only one keeping that alive. For everyone else, it's ancient history.
You expect me to believe that?
It's the truth. What's hurt you the most is your record since the war. Different cities, different jobs, and not one of them shows you can accept any real responsibility.
Elaine, if you just give me one more...
It's too late, Ted. When I get back to Chicago, I'm going to start my life all over again. I'm sorry.
He watches her leave, and a man approaches with a flower.
Excuse me, we'd like you to have this flower from the Church of Religious Consciousness.
Ted grabs his hair and punches him in the face. Passengers walk up the stairs, boarding the plane. Inside, Elaine and a blonde flight attendant direct them.
Hi, what can you see?
Oh, there you go.
You can just follow all the way back.
Thank you.
Hello.
Captain Over and a blonde pilot prepare as a man washes the windshield.
Any word on that storm lifting over Salt Lake, Clarence?
No, not likely, Victor. I just reviewed the area report for 1,600 hours through 2,400.
Uh-huh.
It's an occluded front stalled over the Dakotas, backed up all the way to Utah.
Yeah, well, if she decides to push over to the Great Lakes, it could get plenty sleepy.
Uh-huh.
And what about that southern route around Tulsa?
I double-checked the terminal forecast, and winds aloft, high and far ceilings all the way.
Where do they top out?
The man washing the windshield checks the oil, then falls off, trying to close the hood.
Denver it is.
Sorry, Clarence. Latest weather report shows everything socked in from Salt Lake to Lincoln.
Oh, hi, Roger. Glad to have you aboard. Victor, this is Roger Murdoch, Victor Basta.
How do you do, Roger?
Nice to meet you.
Roger, I was telling Victor I reviewed the area report for 1,600 hours through 2,400.
A man validates Over's parking ticket.
His occluded front stalled over the Dakotas.
In the cabin, a young boy in a suit reads a news magazine and checks out a girl in a purple dress, looking her up and down.
There you go. Thank you.
At the ticket counter.
Can you tell me if Elaine Dickinson is on this flight?
Well, the whole flight crew is boarded.
Let me see.
Oh, yeah, she is on board.
Ted stares at the woman behind the counter.
I'd like one ticket to Chicago. No baggage.
Outside, Ted's taxi still sits on the curb with his passenger inside.
Smoking or non-smoking?
Smoking, please.
There. Have a nice trip.
Smoke billows from the boarding pass as she hands it to Ted. Outside, he approaches the plane with his smoking ticket. He stops, focused on the large aircraft. Warplanes fly through a cloudy sky in a hazy flashback over his face.
Stryker, this is Red Leader 4. Primary target covered by fallen. Decision to proceed is yours. The decision is yours. It's yours.
Smoke and flames erupt from a warplane. Ted walks toward the airplane steps with a determined expression. In the cabin, two black men chat.
Shit, man. That hunk him up.
Subtitles.
Lady?
Golly, that white fellow should stay away from my wife, or I will punch him.
Hey, yo, I can dig it.
Yes, he is wrong for doing that.
I say, hey, Scott.
I knew a man in a similar predicament, and he ended up being sorry. Don't be so naive, Arthur. Each of us faces a clear moral choice.
Hey, you know what they say.
Early to bed, early to rise, makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. How true. Golly. Ted makes his way down the aisle, finding his seat. He sees Elaine giving a passenger a pillow. With a furrowed brow, he sits down beside an elderly woman. He studies his boarding pass, which still emits white smoke. A safety sign illuminates, no smoking, el no ayu smoko. Fasten seatbelts, put on a da seatbelts. The elderly woman surveys Ted as he fastens his seatbelt tightly.
Nervous?
Yes.
First time?
No, I've been nervous lots of times.
The woman in a white blazer hangs a glass IV bottle over the young girl on a gurney, and they share a smile.
Hi, we'll be taking off real soon, so I better fasten you in tight.
Thank you. Oh, Mother, this is so exciting.
I know, but remember, you must get some rest.
That's good advice. You relax, and I'll be back right after we take off.
Thank you.
Outside, a girl and uniformed man hold hands.
God, Bill, I'm gonna miss you so much.
Oh, I'm gonna miss you too. Promise you're right.
Every day.
A train conductor walks toward them.
Bill!
Better get on board, son.
They pull from their hug, locking eyes.
All aboard!
209 at a ground control. We're loaded and ready to taxi.
Goodbye, Bill!
Goodbye, darling! I love you, darling!
209er. Bill hangs out the open door, waving as the plane speeds down the runway.
Goodbye, darling!
Have your picture taken the minute you get there. Send me one, all right?
Okay, here, hurry.
Oh, but it's your watch. You shouldn't. You're gonna need this.
It's all right. It doesn't work.
Bill!
Goodbye, darling.
Bill! Oh.
She runs into two metal towers.
Bill! Oh, with me all the time. I swear to you.
Darling, take care of yourself. Goodbye.
Flight 209er, you are cleared for takeoff.
Roger.
Huh?
L.A. departure frequency, 123.9er.
Roger.
Huh?
Request vector. Over.
What?
Flight 209er, clear for vector 324.
We have clearance, Clarence.
Roger, roger. What's our vector, Victor?
Tower radio clearance, over.
That's Clarence, over.
Over.
Roger.
Huh?
Roger, over.
What?
Hey!
Who?
The airplane builds speed, moving past the runway lights. As the plane soars through the sky, light from the windows glows against dark clouds. Inside, the blonde flight attendant rummages in the crew area of the plane. Ted approaches, swallowing pills. He rubs his temple.
Do you feel all right, sir?
Oh, I haven't flown for a long time.
She walks away with a coffee pot in hand, and his gaze shifts to the floor. Captain Over speaks into a corded phone.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Captain Over speaking.
We'll
be cruising at 36,000 feet this evening. Our arrival time in Chicago will be 10:45 p.m. Central Time.
In the cabin, a nun reads Boy's Life magazine, and a boy reads Nun's Life magazine.
Meanwhile, relax and enjoy your flight.
Would you like something to read?
Do you have anything light?
Oh. How about this leaflet, Famous Jewish Sports Legends?
Yes, thank you.
Elaine looks up in shock.
Ted,
what are you doing here?
Elaine, I've got to talk to you.
You shouldn't have come. I don't have time now.
Oh, stewardess.
Excuse me.
She walks away down the aisle, glancing back at him wide-eyed. Ted slumps back into his seat beside the elderly woman.
No wonder you're upset. She's lovely. And a darling figure. Supple, pouting breasts, firm thighs. It's a shame you two don't get along.
Yes, I know. Things used to be different.
He stares off as she puts on glasses to read.
I remember when we first met. It was during the war.
Annoyed, she takes off her glasses.
I was in the Air Force, stationed in Drambuie, off the Barbary Coast. I used to hang out at the Magumba Bar. It was a rough place, the seediest dive on the wharf, populated with every reject and cutthroat from Bombay to Calcutta. It's worse than Detroit.
A young Ted in a white military uniform holds a glass loosely in his hand at a bar. Feminine legs and black tights walk on the bar top. He looks up to see a woman in a red polka dot dress playing a trombone.
The mood in the place was downright ugly. You wouldn't walk in there unless you knew how to use your fists. You could count on a fight breaking out almost every night.
A fight breaks out over cards and poker chips. The rivals stand, revealing two Girl Scouts. A girl with braids flips the card table and pins the other girl to the wall. The bar patrons ignore the brawl as the girl with braids throws the other through a staircase banister and onto the floor. The other girl, in pigtails, chokes her against a table, then smashes a beer mug over her head. She then raises a chair above her head, and the braided girl rolls out of the way just before it crashes down. The bar patrons continue to ignore them as they exchange punches. The braided girl throws the other across the bar top. Patrons nonchalantly raise their glasses out of the way as she slides past. Her head smashes through a jukebox, turning it on. Ted eyes the machine as a man in a striped shirt moves to the music and others make their way to a dance floor. The man strips off his jacket as the crowd on the floor grows. Neon and string lights shine through the thick haze of the bar, and a disco ball spins from the ceiling.
I didn't go there that night to fall in love. I just dropped in for a couple of drinks. But suddenly, there she was.
His eyes go wide as he spots Elaine dancing in a pink dress. A big smile sweeps across her face as she moves in sync with a man in front of her.
I was captivated, entranced. It hit me like a thunderbolt. I had to ask the guy next to me to pinch me to make sure I wasn't dreaming.
He whispers to the tattooed guy next to him. The man slowly turns his head towards Ted and backs away.
I was afraid to approach her, but that night, fate was on my side.
Elaine's dance partner spins around, and a man wearing an eye patch stabs him in the back. The man flails his arms, motioning to the knife sticking out of his back. Smiling, Elaine copies his movements as though it's a dance. The man collapses to the floor. Ted throws his white military hat and heads for the dance floor. The hat flies back and hits the bartender. He approaches Elaine and they lock eyes. They circle each other without breaking eye contact. Ted takes off his military jacket, revealing a dark shirt under a white vest. He throws it and strikes a disco pose, pointing at the ceiling. Someone throws the jacket back and it hits him in the face. Holding hands, they begin to dance in sync. They spin back to back and continue dancing without missing a step. The crowd watches as Ted spins her around and lifts her above his head. He throws Elaine high into the air, then shifts around like a baseball player watching a pop fly. Elaine lands in his waiting arms, and they continue their dance. White fog consumes the dance floor as they take center stage. Ted jumps on Elaine, his legs around her waist. He leans his torso back as she spins him. Ted's legs and feet slip through her hands. he performs a backflip in midair before landing behind the crowd. He bounces back onto the dance floor from behind the patrons and strikes an iconic disco pose. He continues to dance, pointing his finger back and forth from the ceiling to the floor to the beat of the music. Elaine laughs as he begins executing quirky dance moves. He dances close to the ground, throwing his feet straight out in front of him while he switches arms for support. Throwing his arms and legs out simultaneously, his moves appear to defy gravity. Yellow balls are thrown to him, and he juggles while bouncing around the dance floor in a squat. Through the white fog, the Girl Scouts continue to fight. Ted and Elaine reunite, dancing close to one another. The disco ball reflects the bright colored lights and spins into a blur. Later, Ted and Elaine are alone on the floor, slow dancing. They hold each other tight as the bartender sweeps the floors behind them. Chairs sit on top of tables prepped for closing. A Girl Scout falls onto the dance floor from above as the flashback fades.
We laughed, talked, danced. I never wanted it to end. I guess I still don't. But enough about me. I hope this hasn't been boring for you.
The elderly woman hangs.
It's just that whenever I start to talk about Elaine, I always get so carried away. I lose all track of time.
Her blue lifeless legs dangle above the seat.
Would you like to order dinner now?
Yes. Joey will have the steak and my wife and I will have the fish.
When can I see the cockpit, Dad?
Joey, I think the pilots are probably too busy flying the plane for that.
Ah, gee whiz.
I'll tell you what, Joey. I'll talk to the captain and see what I can arrange.
Gee, that'd be swell.
Elaine moves down the aisle to the black men's seats.
Would you gentlemen care to order your dinners?
Bet, babe. Slide a piece of the porter. Drinks, I run the job.
Subtitles. I would like the steak, please.
Look at here.
I'll have the fish.
I can take grease and chomp it on some butter and drag them through the garden.
Elaine writes down their orders with an uncertain expression, then smiles. The suited young boy approaches the girl in the purple dress.
Excuse me. I happened to be passing. I thought you might like some coffee.
Oh, that's very nice of you. Thank you.
She takes one of two mugs he carries on a tray.
Well, won't you sit down?
Thank you.
The boy sits and takes a mug for himself.
Cream?
No, thank you. I take it black. Like my man.
Blush radiates from the boy's light-skinned face, and his eyes widen. Elaine organizes the cabin crew space before looking up to see Ted sitting and chatting with a mustached man. She blinks rapidly and looks away from him. Her eyes glaze over, lost in thought, and she stares straight ahead. Ocean waves crash and roll to shore. Wearing swimsuits, a younger Ted and Elaine run hand in hand along the water that glistens under the bright sunlight. Smiling, Elaine falls back onto the sandy beach, pulling Ted on top of her. They share a picture-perfect kiss before the heavy tide engulfs them. As water rushes over their embrace, they continue to kiss. As the tide recedes, seaweed is left tangled between and over their bodies.
Oh, Ted, I never knew I could be so happy. These past few months have been just wonderful. Tomorrow, why don't we drive up the coast to that little seafood place and...
His face drops.
What's the matter?
My orders came through. My squadron ships out tomorrow. We're bombing the storage depots at Daiquiri at 1800 hours. We're coming in from the north, below their radar.
When will you be back?
I can't tell you that. It's classified.
Oh, Ted, please be careful. I worry about you so much.
I love you, Elaine.
Beached fish lay beside them, struggling to breathe. Ted moves down for another lasting kiss as the heavy tide consumes them once again. Elaine blinks swiftly as the flashback ends. She picks up a beverage from the cabin crew space and walks off. The airplane moves through the night sky. In the cockpit, Captain Over holds a radio.
Flight 209er, this is Denver Flight Control.
You're approaching some rough weather. Please climb to 42,000 feet.
Elaine enters with Joey.
Roger, Denver.
We have a visitor.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Captain Over, Mr. Murdoch, and Mr. Basta. This is Joey Hammond.
Well, hi, Joey.
Come on up here. You can see better.
Joey, we have something here for our special visitors. Would you like to have it?
He holds a toy plane.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Sure. You ever been in a cockpit before?
No, sir. I've never been up in a plane before.
Have you ever seen a grown man naked?
Do you want me to check the weather, Clarence?
No, why don't you take care of it? Joey, do you ever hang around the gymnasium?
We better get back now, Joey.
No, Joey can stay here for a while if you'd like.
Could I? Okay, if you don't get in the way.
Flight 209er to Denver Radio. Climbing to cruise at 42,000. We'll report again over Lincoln. Over and out.
Wait a minute. I know you. You're Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You play basketball for the Los Angeles Lakers.
I'm sorry, son, but you must have me confused with someone else. My name is Roger Murdoch. I'm the co-pilot.
You are, Kareem. I've seen you play. My dad's got season tickets.
I think you should go back to your seat now, Joey. Right, Clarence?
Oh, he's not bothering anyone. Let him stay here.
Roger stares at Joey.
All right, but just remember, my name is Roger Murdoch. I'm an airline pilot.
I think you're the greatest, but my dad says you don't work hard enough on defense.
Roger rolls his eyes.
And he says that lots of times you don't even run down court. And that you don't really try, except during the playoffs.
The hell I don't.
He takes a paranoid look around.
Listen, kid. I've been hearing that crap ever since I was at UCLA. I'm out there busting my buns every night. Tell your old man to drag Walton and Lanier up and down the court for 48 minutes.
Roger, a.k.a. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, releases Joey's shirt, leaving the boy staring wide-eyed.
Joey, do you like movies about gladiators?
Meanwhile, in the cabin, Elaine sits beside Ted.
Elaine, just hear me out. I know things haven't been right for a long time, but it'll be different. Like it was in the beginning, remember?
I remember everything. All I have are memories. Mostly I remember the nights when we were together. I remember how you used to hold me. How I used to sit on your face and wriggle. And afterwards how we'd watch until the sun came up. When it did, it was almost like each new day was created only for us.
That's the way I've always wanted it to be, Elaine.
And it won't be. Not as long as you insist on living in the past.
As she rushes away from him, Ted flashes back to the smoking warplane.
You're too low, Ted! You're too low!
Two warplanes crash. A sign reads, U.S. Army Psychiatric Hospital. Pentothal available. Nurses walk around men in hospital beds who visit with loved ones.
Thank you. You look so happy today. Dr.
Goysman. Okay, Robert, slipping down. This won't hurt much.
Elaine sits with Ted.
You got a telegram from headquarters today.
Headquarters? What is it?
Well, it's a big building where generals meet, but that's not important right now. They've cleared you of any blame for what happened on that raid. Isn't that good news?
Is it?
He paints.
Because of my mistake, 6 men didn't return from that raid.
He sips water.
7, Lieutenant Zip died this morning. But Dr. Sandler says she'll be out in a week. Isn't that wonderful?
Wish I could say the same for George Zip.
Be patient, Ted. Nobody expects you to get over this immediately.
Hey, Stryker, how about a break? I'm getting tired.
He looks at his painting.
Yeah, all right. Take 5.
A man stops posing.
Thanks.
I found a wonderful apartment for us. Has a brick fireplace and a cute little bedroom with mirrors on the ceiling and...
Red leader, I'm going down!
Captain Jeline. He thinks he's a pilot, still fighting the war.
Jeline pulls his sheets up.
I found the tunnel, Johnson! It's this way! $25 for a cigarette is too much!
Oh.
What's his problem?
It's Lieutenant Hurwitz. Severe shell shock. Thinks he's Ethel Merman.
You'll be swell.
Ethel Merman gets up.
Gonna have the whole world on a plate. Starting here, start now. Honey, everything's coming up right.
Orderlies sedate her.
War is hell.
Back on the plane, the blonde flight attendant interrupts Ted, holding a tray of mugs.
Excuse me, sir. Would you like some coffee before we serve dinner?
No, thank you.
She offers it to Joey's parents.
Would either of you like another cup of coffee?
I will, but Jim won't.
I think I will have another cup of coffee.
His wife stares, wide-eyed.
Jim never has a second cup of coffee at home.
She ponders. The blonde flight attendant approaches a nun dressed in a full habit.
Excuse me, sister.
Yes?
There's a little girl on board up front who's ill and...
Oh, yes, I saw. Poor child.
Could I borrow your guitar? I thought maybe I could cheer her up.
Oh, of course.
Thank you.
She raises the guitar and bumps the passengers' heads as she walks.
Hi.
Hi.
Do you mind if I talk to your daughter?
I think that'd be nice.
The flight attendant sits next to the girl.
Hi, I'm Randy.
I'm Lisa. Oh, you have a guitar.
Mm-hmm. I thought maybe you'd like to hear a song.
The mother smiles.
I'd love to. Okay. Let's see. This is one of my favorites.
I traveled the banks of the River of Jordan to find where it flows to the sea.
The passengers shift to watch her sing, including a man who lowers down from the ceiling.
And I saw that I was looking at me. And I wanted to know if life had a purpose and what it all means in the
Joey
end.
And his parents smile and hug. The two monks grin at one another while Captain Over and Roger smile at each other in the cockpit. Victor turns and also flashes a smile.
There is only one river.
With a swing of the guitar, Randy pops out Lisa's hanging IV line from her arm.
And it flows through you.
Lisa's mom dances in her seat, unaware. Lisa flails to get her attention.
There is only one people.
Lisa's mouth puckers as her eyes roll back into her head.
We are all one spirit.
Lisa manages to put the IV back in her arm as Randy swings her guitar, popping it out again. Her mother notices and grabs the tube as Lisa's face contorts. Her mom begins chest compressions as the oblivious passengers clap to the song. Later, Elaine enters the cockpit with a tray of food.
A little late tonight. We've been waiting for you.
Who wants to be first?
Go ahead, Clarence. I got it.
How's the weather?
Not so good. We got some heavy stuff ahead of us. It might get rough again unless we can climb on top.
Yeah, after the war... just wanted to get as far away from things as possible, so Elaine and I joined the Peace Corps. We were assigned to an isolated tribe, the Malombos. They'd never seen Americans before.
A man in a military uniform rolls his eyes as Ted continues his story. A younger Elaine and Ted walk past straw huts surrounded by a tribe.
It was really a challenge during the year introducing them to our Western culture.
Ted grabs a tribe leader's hand to initiate a handshake. He then uses a different, relaxed handshake.
At first, they didn't know what to think of us, but soon we gained their trust.
The leader opens his hands toward the sky, and Ted slaps them like a high five. He punches Ted. Elaine sits in a circle of tribal women holding Tupperware.
It'll help you better prepare storing foods for the up-and-coming monsoon months. Also, supperware products are ideal for storing leftovers to help stretch your food dollar. This 2-quart seal-some-right container keeps hot dog buns fresh for days.
You must understand, these people had been completely isolated from civilization. No one had ever outlined a physical fitness program for them, and they had no athletic equipment. I started them on simple calisthenics and gradually worked them up to rudimentary game skills. And finally, advanced competitive theory. I was patient with them, and they were eager to learn. They seemed to enjoy themselves. It was probably due to the advanced American teaching techniques that we were able to bridge the generations of isolation and communicate so successfully with the Malambo.
The tribesmen play basketball with advanced skills, dunking and spinning the ball on their fingers as Elaine approaches.
I think they're getting the hang of it. When we reenlist, I'll teach them baseball.
Dad, I don't want to stay here. It's time for us to go back home to the plans we made before the war.
Ted's face becomes serious.
A lot of people made plans before the war. Like George Zip.
Elaine furrows her brow and walks away.
It was at that moment that I first realized Elaine had doubts about our relationship. And that, as much as anything else, led to my drinking problem.
He pours a drink into his forehead.
We did come back to the States. I tried a number of jobs. Well, I could go on for hours, but I'd probably start to bore you. You know, I really couldn't blame Elaine. She wanted a career.
On the plane, the man beside Ted stabs himself in the gut as lightning flashes.
Oh, I can't stand it.
What is it?
Oh.
Yes?
Oh, it's my stomach. I haven't felt this awful since we saw that Ronald Reagan film.
I'll see if I can find some Dramamine.
A short-haired woman clutches her stomach as Elaine walks away. Elaine grabs a corded phone in the crew space.
Captain, one of the women passengers is very sick.
Air sick?
I think so, but I've never seen it so acute.
Find out if there's a doctor on board, as quietly as you can.
Joey enters the cockpit with a basketball.
Joey, have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
Oh, I should have had that second cup of coffee.
Jim grabs an air sick bag and vomits. His wife watches him, looking confused.
Jim never vomits at home.
I'm sorry I had to wake you. I'm just looking for a doctor. There's nothing to worry about.
Stewardess, I think the man sitting next to me is a doctor.
Sir, excuse me, sir. I'm sorry I have to wake you. You a doctor?
That's right.
We have some passengers that are very sick. Could you come take a look at them?
Yes. Yes, of course.
The doctor has a stethoscope hanging from his ears. He stands and goes with Elaine to the short-haired woman. He holds out his hand, and the medical scissors are placed in his grip.
Let me see your tongue.
The woman's eyes grow wide as she opens her mouth, and a white egg emerges between her lips. The doctor pulls it from her mouth with his fingers and sets it on her tray table as another egg begins to show. He removes the next egg. Her mouth opens again with a third egg, and he extracts it. The doctor cracks the egg over her mug, and a small bird flies out.
I'll be back in a minute.
He motions with his head for Elaine to follow him into the aisle, and another egg appears in the woman's mouth.
You'd better tell the captain we've got to land as soon as we can. This woman has to be gotten to a hospital.
A hospital? What is it?
It's a big building with patients, but that's not important right now. Tell the captain I must speak to him.
Certainly.
In the cockpit, Victor is covered in sweat. He loosens his tie before collapsing unconscious.
Victor, we're running into some heavy weather. Can you... Roger, take over.
Kareem watches as Over moves to Victor. Captain Over moves Victor onto the floor, then quickly exits the cockpit. Kareem wipes sweat from his forehead as he flies alone. Later, the airplane continues to fly in dense fog as the doctor exits the cockpit with Captain Over.
Captain, how soon can you land?
I can't tell.
You can tell me I'm a doctor.
No, I mean I'm just not sure.
Or can't you take a guess?
Well, not for another 2 hours.
You can't take a guess for another 2 hours?
No. I mean, we can't land for another 2 hours. Fog has closed down everything this side of the mountains. We've got to get through to Chicago.
The plane begins to shake violently. Randy wavers, carrying food, and falls, smashing a plate of food into a passenger's face. The airplane descends through the storm. Over grabs the controls as the doctor and Elaine pull an unconscious Kareem from his seat, revealing his basketball shorts and socks. The captain fights to regain control as the dial on the flight panel spins rapidly. The airplane slowly lifts from a nosedive. Inside, a gauge labeled level flight indicator stabilizes horizontally.
What is it, Doctor? What's going on?
I'm not sure.
Haven't seen anything like this since the Anita Bryant concert. What was it we had for dinner tonight?
Well, we had a choice, steak, fish.
Yes, yes, I remember. I had lasagna. What did he have?
He had fish. Doctor, there are two more sick people, and the rest of the passengers are worried.
I'll take care of the passengers. Find out what the two sick people had for dinner. This is Captain Over speaking.
Been a little bumpy up here, but we'll be past it in a few minutes. A couple points of interest. We're now flying over Hoover Dam.
The flight attendants drag the unconscious pilots past the oblivious passengers.
Meanwhile, relax and enjoy your flight, okay?
Chicago, this is Flight 209er. We're in trouble. We've got to have all traffic below us cleared. And I want a priority approach and landing in Chicago.
Meanwhile, Randy approaches Jim and his wife.
Yes.
Oh, stewardess, my husband's very sick. Can you do something, please?
Well, the doctor will be with you in just a moment. One thing, do you know what he had for dinner?
Yes, of course. We both had fish. Why?
Oh, it's nothing to be alarmed about. We'll be back to you very quickly.
Randy turns away with an exaggerated, worried expression and bites her knuckle. Elaine enters the cockpit.
Dr. Room, Mr. Hammond ate fish, and Randy said there are five more cases, and they all had fish, too.
Yeah, the co-pilot had fish. What did the navigator have?
He had fish.
All right. Now we know what we're up against. Every passenger on this plane who had fish for dinner will become violently ill in the next half hour.
Over looks away, concerned.
How serious is it, Doctor?
Extremely serious. Starts with a slight fever, dryness of the throat. As the virus penetrates red blood cells, the victim becomes dizzy. Begins to experience an itching, a rash. From there, the poison goes to work on the central nervous system, causing severe muscle spasms, followed by the inevitable drooling. At this point, the entire digestive system collapses, accompanied by uncontrollable flatulence, until finally the poor bastard is reduced to a quivering, wasted piece of jelly.
Over displays each symptom as the doctor describes them, then collapses onto the controls. The plane begins to shake, and a woman's breasts jiggle, along with the dessert on her tray. Another woman tries to apply lipstick and misses. A no-smoking sign illuminates. Below it, a no-sex sign illuminates.
Airline. Automatic pilot.
Automatic pilot.
They move the captain.
There it is.
Elaine flips a switch, and an inflatable man dressed as a pilot sits at the controls.
I'll go back to the passengers.
He exits. She grabs the radio.
This is Elaine Dickinson. I'm the stewardess. Captain Over's passed out on the floor, and we've lost the co-pilot. The navigator, too. We're in terrible trouble. Over.
Roger, Elaine. Roger. I read you. This is Steve McCroskey at Chicago Air Control.
Back to you in a minute. Hold all takeoffs. I don't want another plane in the air. When the 508 reports, bring it straight in.
Yes, sir.
Put out a general bulletin to suspend all meal service on flights out of Los Angeles. Tell all dispatchers to remain at the post. It's going to be a long night. How about some coffee, Johnny?
No, thanks.
I want the weather on every landing field this side of the runway, no matter what the size. You understand? Any place where there's a chance to land that plane. Stan, go upstairs to the tower and get a runway diagram. Terry, check down the field for emergency.
The conjoined twins struggle to move in different directions.
We got fog right down to the deck, every place east of the Rockies. There's no possible place they can land. They'll have to come through to Chicago.
Like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking. I want the best available man on this. A man who knows that plane inside and out and won't crack under pressure.
How about Mr. Rogers?
McCroskey pauses as he lights his cigarette, then waves out the match.
Get me Rex Kramer.
In the cockpit, Elaine sits beside the inflatable pilot.
Now, Elaine, right next to the throttle is the airspeed gauge. What speed does it indicate?
She spots the gauge.
520 miles per hour.
Good, very good. Now, check your altitude. That's the dial just below and to the right of the airspeed indicator.
35,000 feet. No, wait, 34,000 feet. No, it's dropping. It's dropping fast. Why is it doing that?
The autopilot sinks into his seat.
Oh my God, the automatic pilot, it's deflating!
Elaine, don't panic. On the belt line of the automatic pilot, there is a hollow tube. Now, that is the manual inflation nozzle. Pull it out and blow on it.
Elaine moves toward it. Meanwhile, the doctor stands in front of a woman's elevated legs.
What the hell's going on up there?
Holding a gynecologist speculum, he moves away from the woman and toward the cockpit. Elaine pulls a clear tube from the autopilot's belt buckle and begins to blow. The doctor enters the cockpit and stops, spotting Elaine bent over the inflatable pilot blowing. He promptly turns and exits. The doctor shuts the door with a suspicious expression. As Elaine continues blowing, the autopilot's head spins forward, displaying a large grin, and begins nodding. The plane steadies in the thick, overcast sky. The passengers shift in their seats as the plane levels. Elaine and the fully inflated autopilot smoke cigarettes in the cockpit. She blows smoke in the air above her head and glances towards him. The plane now flies slightly upward against the gloomy night. The doctor enters the cockpit.
Elaine?
Yes, doctor?
Elaine, you're a member of this crew. Can you face some unpleasant facts?
No.
All right. Unless I get all those people to a hospital quickly, I can't even be sure of saving their lives. Now, is there anyone on board who can land this plane?
Well...
In the cabin, Ted tries to take a drink and misses his mouth.
No one I know of.
I think you ought to know what our chances are. The life of everyone on board depends upon just one thing. Finding someone back there who can not only fly this plane, but who didn't have fish for dinner.
Her eyes widen as lightning flashes against her face from the storm outside. Elaine picks up the captain's phone and hesitates before speaking.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your stewardess speaking. We regret any inconvenience the sudden cabin movement might have caused. This is due to periodic air pockets we encountered. There's no reason to become alarmed.
Randy drags an unconscious captain over past the oblivious passengers.
By the way, is there anyone on board who knows how to fly a plane?
The passengers rise from their seats in a panic. A topless woman runs by, breasts bouncing. Two men fence in the aisle as the nun chokes one of the monks. The monk pushes his hand into her face, struggling to breathe. Elsewhere, a convertible comes to a halt, and a lean man with glasses races from the car to a suburban house. A woman dressed in beige opens the door.
Hello, I'm Paul Carey from the airline. I'm here to pick up Captain Kramer.
Oh, yes. Come in, Paul. Rex will be right out.
A golden retriever jumps on Paul.
Chair. Sit. So I understand you have a real emergency down there.
Yeah, something like that. But as I say, they didn't have time to tell me very much.
The dog paws at Paul.
Chef, no. I bet you have exciting things happen all the time down there.
Well, the airline business does have its moments, but after a while, you begin to get used to it.
Chef, come.
He gets so excited when new people are here.
Are you a pilot yourself?
No, I'm in.
The dog tackles him.
Training program.
It's unbelievable. Just unbelievable. How many times have I warned those people about food inspection?
You'd think after all these years, someone would listen to me.
Oh, well. Airport management, the FAA, and the airlines.
The dog attacks Paul in the background.
Oh, cheats and liars. All right, let's get out of here.
Kramer exits, and they ignore Paul being attacked. On the plane, Randy stands beside the two monks.
I'm sorry to bother you. I was just looking for someone with flying experience.
When they built those roads, they had no thought of drainage in mind. So we had to take a special Jeep up to the main road. In fact, we were lucky to even get a Jeep since just the day before. Only one that we had broke down and a bad accident.
Excuse me, sir. There's been a little problem in the cockpit.
The cockpit? What is it?
It's the little room in the front of the plane where the pilots sit. That's not important right now. You see, the first officer is ill, and the captain needs someone to help him with the radio. Do you know anything about planes?
Ted looks down.
Well, I flew in the war, but it was years ago. I wouldn't know anything about it.
Would you go up, please?
The man seated beside Ted holds a lit match in the air, his body covered in gasoline. He nods at Ted. The man blows the match out in relief as Ted leaves, then lowers it to his lap. An explosion expands from his lap.
The stewardess said
Ted freezes, looking at the autopilot.
Both pilots?
Can you fly this plane and land it?
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Doctor, I've checked everyone. Mr. Stryker's the only one.
What flying experience have you had?
Well, I flew single-engine fighters in the Air Force, but this plane has four engines. It's an entirely different kind of flying, altogether.
It's an entirely different kind of flying.
His eyes dart between the doctor and Randy.
Besides, I haven't touched any kind of plane in 6 years.
Mr. Stryker, I know nothing about flying, but there's one thing I do know. You're the only one on this plane who can possibly fly it. You're the only chance we've got.
Ted focuses his attention on the captain's seat and moves slowly toward it. He stops, surveying the overwhelming amount of gauges and switches on the flight panel that stretches endlessly. More and more instruments come into view as it continues to stretch. Meanwhile, Ted's taxi still sits on the curb at the airport. The passenger checks his watch as the meter continues into the thousands.
That's right. That's right. That's what I said. You heard me. Tell Omaha to acknowledge and stand by every piece of emergency equipment you can reach. Alert rescue units at every mile of the way. Here to the Rockies.
Chief?
We'll need a pre-landing flight check. Tell him I'm in the dispatch office and I want it here fast.
It's your wife.
I want the kids in bed by night. I want the dog fed, the yard watered, and the gate locked. And get a note to the milkman. No more cheese.
McCroskey slams down the phone.
Where the hell's Kramer?
He props himself on a desk with a cigarette in his mouth. A matching portrait hangs on the wall behind him. Meanwhile, the convertible speeds down a road.
No, we can't do that. The risk of a flameout's too great. Keep him at 24,000. No, feet.
A disheveled Paul stares ahead as Kramer hangs up the phone.
One of the passengers is going to land that plane.
Is that possible?
Possible. It's 100-to-1 shot.
Paul's eyes widen as they hit a man on a bike.
I know this guy.
You do? Who is it?
Name's Ted Stryker. I flew with him during the war. That won't make my job any easier tonight. Ted Stryker was a crack flight leader up to a point. One of those men who, let's just say, felt too much inside. Maybe you know the kind. And all the pieces on a particular mission. Let's just hope that doesn't happen tonight.
The road behind them changes to men riding horses. In the cockpit, Ted loosens his tie and nervously puts on his pilot headset.
Altitude, 24,000 feet. Level flight, speed 520 knots, course 090, trim, mixture, wash, soak, rinse, spin.
Ted scans the flight panel with the doctor as Elaine enters.
Ted, what are you doing here? You can't fly this plane.
That's what I've been trying to tell these people.
Elaine, I don't have time to say this gently, so I'll be very direct. Everyone on this plane is in a desperate situation. Mr. Stryker is the only hope we've got.
Lightning flashes, and a statue of Jesus by the windshield covers his face.
Those are the flaps. That's the thrust. This must turn on the landing lights.
Ted flips a switch, and the plane lurches forward. The passengers lean to the side as the plane rolls. A safety sign flashes. Return to seat. Go back in Sedona. Ted clutches the radio.
Mayday! Mayday!
Mayday! Mayday, what the hell is that?
Mayday? Why, that's the Russian New Year. You know, we'll have a big parade and we'll serve hotter dirt.
McCroskey sits down at a radio. Ted struggles to gain control and flips a switch on the panel. The airplane levels again. In the cabin, Joey's mother panics.
I can't stand it anymore. I've got to get out of here. I've got to get out of here.
Calm down. Get a hold of yourself.
Stewardess, please, let me handle this.
A man shakes and slaps her.
Calm down now. Get back to your seat. I'll take care of this. Calm down.
The doctor shakes and slaps her.
Doctor, you want it on the phone. Everything's going to be all right. Please.
Sister, please, I'll handle this.
The nun shakes and slaps her. A line of passengers with increasingly menacing weapons wait to shake her.
Excuse me, we'd like you to have this flower.
Kramer pushes a man aside.
Excuse me, sir, would you?
He shoves the next.
Donation to the Reverend Moon?
Kramer punches him.
Jews for Jesus?
Oh! Read about Jehovah's Witness?
He kicks and flips another.
How about Buddhism?
Help Jerry's kids?
Oh, yeah.
Scientology?
Or nuclear power?
The religious men lie defeated on the floor. A sign looms. Self-service baggage claim.
Your attention, please. No frills passengers now arriving. Please have your baggage claim checks ready.
People ride on the baggage claim conveyor belt instead of luggage.
I know, but this guy doing the flying has no airline experience at all. He's a menace to himself and everything else in the air. Yes, birds too.
Okay, he's a terrible risk, but what are the choices we got? That's the whole story there, Rex. Everything we know.
All right, Steve, let's face a few facts. As you know, I flew with this man Stryker during the war. He's going to have enough on his mind without worrying about those times when things weren't so good.
Right now, things aren't so good.
Let me tell you something, Steve. Ted Stryker was a top-notch squadron leader. A long time ago.
Rex, I want you to get on the horn and talk that guy down. Now, you're going to have to let him get the feel of that airplane on the way. Then you'll have to talk him onto the approach. So help me, you'll have to talk him right down to the ground.
A watermelon lands on a desk.
Very well. Put Stryker on the speaker.
Okay, use my radio.
Kramer moves past McCroskey.
Looks like I took the wrong week to quit drinking.
McCroskey takes a swig from a flask.
Now you can work him direct from here, Captain.
Thanks.
Kramer picks up a radio.
Stryker, this is Captain Rex Kramer speaking.
Ted sets his jaw and picks up the radio.
Yes, Captain Kramer. Read you loud and clear.
Elaine looks at Ted inquisitively.
Right, it's obvious you remember me. So what do you say you and I just forget about everything except what we have to do now?
Let's not kid each other, Kramer. You know I've never flown a bucket like this. I'm gonna need all the luck there is.
Stand by, Stryker.
To McCroskey.
My one hope is to build this man up. I'm gonna give him all the confidence I can. Stryker? You ever flown a multi-engine plane before?
No, never.
Shit. This is a goddamn waste.
The time's no way you can land this plane.
Have a hold of yourself. You gotta talk him down. You gotta.
Route him into Lake Michigan. At least he'll avoid killing innocent people.
You're the only chance they've got.
Ted and Elaine look shocked, overhearing the conversation through the radio.
All right. Stryker, you listen close. Flying a plane is no different than riding a bicycle.
Just a lot harder to put baseball cards in the spokes.
First, I want you to get the feel of the plane.
Later, we'll run down the landing procedure.
Kramer throws his cigarette out the window, and McCroskey covers his ears as it explodes.
All right, now I want you to disengage the automatic pilot. But watch out you don't make any violent control movements like you did in the fighter plane.
All right, I'm going to unlock the automatic pilot.
Ted and Elaine share a look as he flips a switch. The plane begins to jostle.
Just remember, the controls will feel very heavy compared to a fighter.
The autopilot floats to the roof.
Don't worry about that. It's perfectly normal.
He struggles to steady the plane as the autopilot floats in front of him. The woman, putting on makeup, smears it all over her face. Ted pushes the autopilot out of his view, and it attaches to Elaine, cupping her breasts.
One more thing. There's somebody there who can work the radio and leave you free for flying.
Yes, the stewardess is here with me.
Good. Ever sit in the co-pilot seat.
Elaine wrestles the autopilot off her.
Elaine, we want you to sit in the co-pilot seat.
The plane stabilizes, and she sits beside Ted, running a hand through her mussed hair. Meanwhile, the man beside the sick, short-haired woman stands.
What's going on? We have a right to know the truth.
The doctor turns to him.
All right, I'm going to level with you all. The most important thing now is that you remain calm. There's no reason to panic. Now, it is true that one of the crew members is ill. Slightly ill.
His nose grows.
The other two pilots are just fine. They're at the controls flying the plane, free to pursue a life of religious fulfillment.
The radio's all yours now. And keep an eye on that number 3 engine gauge over there. It's running a little hot.
A red light with the words "a little hot" blinks.
Stryker, before we start, I'd like to say something.
I know that right now things must look pretty rough up there. But if you do what I tell you, when I tell you to do it...
There's no reason why you shouldn't have complete confidence in your chances to come out of this thing alive and in one piece.
Stryker, what kind of weather are you in up there?
Rain.
And a little ice.
And a little ice.
How's it handling?
Sluggish, like a wet sponge.
Sluggish,
like a wet sponge.
All right, Stryker, you're doing just fine.
It's a damn good thing he doesn't know how much I hate his guts.
It's a damn good thing you don't know how much he hates your guts.
Ted turns to her wide-eyed as Kramer and McCroskey share a look. In the cabin, one of the black men clutches his stomach.
Can I get you something?
He turns to her.
It's your mofo butter laying me to the bone, jacking me up. Tighten me.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Cuddy say can't hang.
Oh, stewardess, I speak jive.
Oh, good.
He said that he's in great pain and he wants to know if you can help him.
All right, would you tell him to just relax and I'll be back as soon as I can with some medicine.
The elderly white woman turns to the men.
Just hang loose, blood. She's gonna catch up on the rebound out of med side.
What it is, big mama. My mama raised no dummies. I duck her rap.
Cut me some slack, Jack. Chomp don't want to help. Chomp don't get to help.
Say can't hang, say seven up.
Jive ass dude don't got no brains anyhow.
The men share a look. At ground control, a map is ripped from a machine as McCroskey enters.
Sis, give me Captain Over's wife on the phone. We better let her know what's going on.
Chief, this weather bulletin just came off the wire.
McCroskey studies the paper map as Johnny types.
Johnny, what can you make out of this?
This? Well, I could make a cap, or a brooch, or a pterodactyl.
He snatches the map from Johnny. Elsewhere, a woman lies in a dark bedroom. She opens her eyes and reaches for the phone.
Hello?
Mrs. Over?
Yes, this is Mrs. Over.
This is Ed Macias calling from the airport. There's some trouble on your husband's flight. We don't know how serious it is yet, but Steve McCroskey thought you'd want to get down here right away.
Yes, I'll be right down.
She turns on a lamp, revealing a horse tucked under the covers next to her.
I've got to go to the airport. You can let yourself out the back door. There's juice in the refrigerator.
The horse raises its head as she starts to leave. In the cockpit, Elaine hangs up the phone.
Dr. Rumick says the sick people are getting worse and we're running out of time.
Ted wears a serious expression.
I've got to concentrate. I've got to concentrate.
Hello? Hello?
He shifts his eyes upward.
Echo! Echo! Pinch hitting for Pedro Borbón, Manny Mota.
The sick short-haired woman sweats under a blanket.
How you doing, honey?
Jack, I'm so hot, I'm burning up.
I'll turn on some air.
Jack reaches above his head. A violent gust of wind blows from above his head, and sheets of paper go flying. In the cockpit.
Cargo, the passengers are beginning to panic. When do we start down?
Not just yet. There's been radar range any second now.
I don't understand. It should have been arranged 10 minutes ago.
Gunnison, check the radar range. Anything yet?
A man opens a microwave oven.
It's about 2 more minutes, Chief.
A whole turkey sits inside.
2 more minutes? They could be miles off course.
That's impossible. They're on instruments.
They play musical instruments in the cockpit.
This is going to be a real sweat. Gunderson, let me know when you get anything. Got a cigarette, Nels?
I can't take much more of this.
McCroskey picks up a bottle of pills and dumps one into his hand.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to quit amphetamines.
He pops the pill.
Johnny, how about some more coffee?
No, thanks.
Chief, these reporters won't leave without a statement.
How much longer can those passengers hold out?
Half an hour, maybe 45 minutes.
Who's flying the plane?
One of the passengers. But he's an experienced Air Force pilot who flew during the war, so there's no cause for alarm. Henshaw, take over.
What kind of plane is it?
Oh, it's a big, pretty white plane with red stripes and curtains in the window and wheels, and it looks like a big Tylenol.
Okay, boys, let's get some pictures.
The reporters rush to the walls and remove framed photos, then vacate with them tucked under their arms. Elsewhere, newspapers speed through a press. A Chicago Times headline reads, "Disaster looms for airline passengers." A New York Tribune headline reads, "Chicago prepares for a crash landing." A National Enquirer headline reads, "Boy trapped in refrigerator eats own foot." A newscaster is handed a sheet of paper.
This bulletin just handed to me.
Stricken airliner approaching Chicago.
An Asian newscaster is handed a bulletin. An islander drums with a primitive drawing of an airplane behind him. He's handed smaller sticks from off-screen. Elsewhere...
Shayna, they bought their tickets. They knew what they were getting into.
The man turns forward.
I say, let them crash.
Lightning crashes as the plane continues through the heavy downpour, obscuring the overcast night. In the cabin, Jack takes a swig from a flask, and a stern woman in a purple beret stares daggers at him. She looks away as he notices.
Would you like a little whiskey, ma'am?
Certainly not.
Jack settles back into his seat as the stern woman pulls out a compact mirror with lines of cocaine on it. She snorts the lines with a straw.
How are the passengers doing?
I won't deceive you, Mr. Stryker. We're running out of time.
Shirley, there must be something you can do.
I'm doing everything I can. And stop calling me Shirley.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T, find out what it means to me. R-E-S-P-E-C-T, take out T-C-P. Suck it to me, 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 suck it to me. A little bit.
The nun continues strumming as one of the black men vomits. In the crew area, Randy fills a cup with ice as Dr. Rumack fills a syringe. They stand back to back.
Randy, are you all right?
Oh, Dr. Rumack, I'm scared. I've never been so scared. And besides, I'm 26 and I'm not married.
Now, we're going to make it. You've got to believe that.
Dr. Rumack, do you have any idea when we'll be landing?
Pretty soon. How are you bearing up?
Well, to be honest, I've never been so scared. But at least I have a husband.
Randy cries as Joey's mother exits. The plane wavers through the torrential rain. Water batters the cockpit windshield. As Ted tries to focus, the gauges blur.
Stay in formation. Target's just ahead. Target should be clear if you go in low enough. You'll have to decide. You'll have to decide. You'll have to decide. Stay in formation. Target's just ahead. Target should be clear if you go in low enough.
Ted sees visions of old-fashioned aircraft crashing. Sudden shaking pulls Ted back to the present. Flames fire out of the plane's jet engine.
Oh, rats! Lost number four.
What happened, Ted? What went wrong?
The oil pressure. I forgot to check the oil pressure. When Kramer hears about this, the shit's gonna hit the fan.
Feces fly into an office fan.
Watch that oil temperature. What the hell's he doing up there?
Stryker, that plane can't land itself. It takes a pilot who can handle pressure.
Ease off, Rex. He hasn't flown for years. It's not his fault. Could happen to any pilot.
It happened to Barbara Stanwyck.
You can't push him too hard. He might break. Gotta remember who you're dealing with.
Nick, Pete, Jared, there's a fire in the bar.
That's right. I can't take the pressure. I was crazy to think I could land this plane.
But Ted, you know.
I don't care.
The plane shakes as he leaves his seat.
I don't have what it takes. I'd be better off with someone who'd never flown before.
Ted drags the autopilot into his seat. Its inflatable arms stabilize the plane as he storms out, leaving a terrified Elaine alone. In the control room.
Bad news. The fog is getting thicker.
And Leon's getting larger.
Johnny shakes Leon's belly. Lightning surrounds the plane. In the cabin, a man holds his stomach as he walks down the aisle. Ted sits alone staring at a white cup in his hands. As he goes to drink, he misses his mouth and water pours down his face. He slumps with a defeated expression. He looks up to see Dr. Rumack.
I know what you're gonna say, so save your breath.
The doctor leans in.
No, I don't have a thing to say. You've done the best you could. You really have the best you could. You can't expect to win them all.
Ted stares off.
I want to tell you something I kept to myself through these years. I was in the war myself, medical corps. I was on late duty one night when they brought in a badly wounded pilot from one of the raids. Could barely talk. He looked up at me and Doc, he said, The odds were against us up there, but we went in anyway. I'm glad. Captain made the right decision. Pilot's name was George Zipp.
Ted's eyes widen.
George Zipp said that?
Dr. Rumack nods.
The last thing he said to me, Doc, he said, sometime. The crew is up against it. The brakes are beating the boys. Tell them to get out there and give it all they've got. And win just one for the zipper.
Ted sits up straighter.
I don't know where I'll be then, Doc, he said. I won't smell too good, that's for sure.
Excuse me, Doc. I've got a plane to land.
Ted strides to the cockpit, and a smile spreads over the doctor's face. Ted enters the cockpit as the autopilot steers.
All right, Stryker, you better stay up there for a bit. As soon as the fog lifts, we'll bring you in.
I'll take it, Elaine.
Elaine holds the radio, looking at Ted as he pulls the autopilot from his seat. Ted pulls his headset on and grabs the controls.
Listen to me, Kramer. Dr. Rumack says the sick people are in critical condition, and every minute counts. We've got to land now.
Don't be a fool, Stryker. You know what a landing like this means you more than anybody. I'm ordering you to stay up there.
No dice, Chicago. I'm giving the orders and we're coming in. I guess the foot's on the other hand now, isn't it, Kramer?
Ted's expression flickers with confusion.
He'll never make it in this soup. Never. Not one chance in a million.
I know. But it's his ship now, his command. He's in charge. He's a boss, head man, top dog. Big cheese, a head honcho.
Captain, number. Look at this.
Kramer is handed a newspaper.
Passenger certain to die.
Airline negligent.
There's a sale at Penny's.
McCroskey yanks the paper from Johnny.
All right, I'll need three men up in the tower. You, Nubar, you must see us.
Me, John, big tree.
Stand by, Stryker. We're going to the tower. Good luck.
We're going to the tower.
The tower? The tower? Rapunzel! Rapunzel!
Johnny gracefully leaps through the room. In the cabin.
Stewardess, How soon do we land?
Oh, it won't be long now. Try not to worry.
The elderly woman puts on headphones. The passengers watch a video of a fiery plane crash on a small movie screen. In the control tower, a referee greets Kramer and McCroskey.
We're all ready, sir. It's Captain McCroskey. This is Captain Roberts, Captain Kramer, this is Captain Colosimo, Captain Henshaw, this is Captain Gatz, Captain Kramer, Captain Gatz, Captain Henshaw, Captain Roberts.
All right, Colosimo, you work the relay. Roberts, check all air traffic within 5 miles. Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Roberts takes his finger out of his ear and sniffs it.
Dave!
Got a cigarette now, sir?
Linda. Your husband and the others are alive, but unconscious.
Just like Gerald Ford.
Now, there's a chance that we can save him if Stryker can get that plane down in time.
That isn't much of a chance, is it?
I don't know, Lynn. I don't know. But we're doing everything we can. Now, excuse me, huh?
He leaves Mrs. Over alone with Johnny, who surveys her outfit.
Where did you get that dress? It's awful, and those shoes and that coat. Jeez!
She cries. The dispatcher plays a video game.
8 miles, turn right to heading 044.
2,000 feet, beginning our descent.
Steve, on whatever light you can get poured onto that field.
Being done right now.
A dump truck pours loose lamps onto the runway.
Now to all emergency vehicles. Runway is Niner.
Airport vehicles take positions 1 and 2.
Civilian equipment, number 3.
A beer truck, cement mixer, and tractor drive behind emergency vehicles.
All ambulances go to number 3.
Israel, please clear the runway.
The airplane has a beard and wears a yarmulke and prayer shawl. In the cabin.
In a moment, we'll ask you to assume crash positions. Your life jackets are located under your seat. Place the jacket over your head, and when I give the word, pull the cord on the right side flat.
It inflates into a duck.
Your seat cushions are also equipped with a flotation device.
WZAZ in Chicago, where disco lives forever.
The plane's wing takes down WZAZ's tower.
Watch your altitude, Stryker. You're too erratic. You can't come straight in. Got enough fuel left for 2 hours of flying.
I'll take it, Elaine. Listen to me, Kramer.
We have people up here who will die in less than an hour, let alone two. I may bend your precious airplane, but I'll get it down. I'm putting the landing gear down now.
Mr. Stryker, the passengers are ready.
Thanks, Randy. You better leave, sweetheart. You might get hurt up here.
Randy glances at Elaine and leaves. Elaine smiles. Ted turns his head toward the exit before refocusing ahead.
Yes?
I wanted you to know, now, I'm very proud.
She smiles, staring at him. Ted looks back ahead in concentration.
Tell him the gear is down and we're ready to land.
Elaine grabs the radio.
The gear is down and we're ready to land.
In the control tower.
All right, he's on final now. Put out all runway lights except Niner.
A man in a headset wears a confused expression.
Captain, maybe we ought to turn on the searchlights now.
Oh. That's just what they'll be expecting us to do.
Kramer stares ahead intensely. Meanwhile, Dr. Rumack pokes his head into the cockpit.
I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
All right, now just listen carefully. You should be able to see the runway at 300 feet. Aim a touchdown a third of the way along. Slight crosswind from the right, so be ready for it. Land too fast, use your emergency brakes. Red handle's right in front of you. That doesn't stop you.
Mrs. Over clings to Kramer, rubbing his chest. He pauses to look at her, and she sheepishly lowers her hands.
That doesn't stop you. Cut the four ignition switches over the co-pilot's head.
The airplane is consumed by dense fog.
You see us now? You should be able to see the field now.
A Dalmatian sits on a fire truck as firefighters search the heavy clouds. Nothing is visible above the city lights.
Sure is quiet out there.
Too quiet.
McCroskey reaches into his pocket.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to quit sniffing glue.
He sniffs from a small tube, and his eyes widen as he falls backwards. Meanwhile, in the sky, the airplane's headlights barely shine through the clouds.
There it is.
Ted points to a barely visible runway.
There he is.
Glowing lights shine through the clouds.
Stryker, you're coming in too fast.
I know.
He knows.
McCroskey sits up, smiles, and collapses.
Below 700 now, still going down. 675, 650, 625.
A man opens one of the radar screens and pulls out his laundry.
Sound your alarm bell, now.
Elaine reaches for the alarm.
All right now, everybody, get in crash position.
The passengers begin to lay their bodies around the plane like crash victims.
Put down 30 degrees of flap.
McCroskey hangs upside down, sniffing from the tube.
All right, good, now listen to me. Remember your brakes and switches. Get ready to flare it out.
He's all over the place. 900 feet up to 1,300 feet. What an asshole.
More left rudder. Put down more flap.
The runway goes dark, and Elaine and Ted turn to each other with panicked expressions.
Just kidding.
Johnny plugs in a cord.
Stryker, lift your nose. Straighten your wings. It's coming in too fast. Watch your speed.
He's coming right at us!
The plane erratically shifts toward the lit runway, and McCroskey jumps through a window.
Coming in too hot! Ease up on the front. Watch for that crosswind. Level it out. Aim for the numbers. Let the dip your left wing.
Ted clutches the controls, struggling to steer.
They're drifting. Keep your eyes on the far end of the runway.
The plane sways erratically.
You're too low, dammit! Watch your stall speed.
The plane swings past the edges of the runway.
Fire out!
It hovers close to the ground.
Eyes are down! Down!
Ted leans his body onto the controls, and the plane tires make contact.
The brake! Hold the red handle!
Ted pulls and rips the handle out. Dr. Rumack pokes his head in.
I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
The plane continues to speed down the runway. A sweat pours from Ted's head. Meanwhile, people sit in the lobby of Gate 8.
Flight 209, now arriving at Gate 8. Gate 9. Gate 10.
One. Push a button!
Sweat showers from Ted's head.
Gate 13. Gate 14. Gate 15.
The crowd of people run to the next gate. Ted stomps his feet on the brakes, and the wheels of the plane buckle and detach.
Addie Ann, look what I've returned! It's a twister! It's a twister!
Johnny twists his body.
Gate 23, 24, 25.
People race past gate 19. The plane drifts to a stop in the middle of the runway. Kramer slumps. Men in the control room celebrate as a group of reporters run past them into a line of phone booths. Their weight tips the booths over. Wearing yellow life jackets, the passengers stand up from their crash victim positions. Elaine and Ted take off their headsets.
I just want to tell you both, good luck. We're all counting on you.
Rumack exits, and they share a smile before leaving their seats.
Stryker? Stryker, you all right?
Yeah. We're okay.
Ted, that was probably the lousiest landing in the history of this airport. Some of us here, particularly me, would like to buy you a drink and shake your hand.
Ted sets down the radio. They smile and exit the cockpit.
And Ted, I just want you to know that when the going got rough...
The passengers slide out of the plane.
Okay, all right, have a nice day. Have a nice day. Thank you for flying Trans-American.
Loneliness, that's the bottom line.
The cockpit is empty.
I was never happy as a child. Christmas, Ted, what does that mean to you? To me, it was a living hell. You know, just like to fall in the mud and get kicked in the head by an iron boot. Of course you don't. No one does. It never happens. Sorry, Ted, it's a dumb question. Skip that.
As Kramer paces in the tower, Lisa is rushed into an ambulance with her mother.
Hey, there you go. Have a nice day.
The woman who was applying makeup slides out of the plane with a smeared and streaked face. The ambulance drives away. A hubcap rolls from the direction of the ambulance.
Municipal bonds, Ted. I'm talking AA rating. The best investment in America.
As Kramer continues talking into the radio, Ted and Elaine kiss on the runway. Elaine holds his arms gently as they share a long kiss. The airport lights blur around them. Elaine moves her hand to his shoulder as they continue to kiss. A gust of wind blows their hair and they look toward the plane. From the captain's seat, the autopilot salutes his inflatable arm, and the plane begins to slide and spark down the runway. The airplane rises and takes off into the night sky. Elaine and Ted wave. The autopilot waves to them from the cockpit as an inflatable woman rises in the co-pilot seat. The autopilot winks. Red and yellow fireworks burst in the air. Words appear. The end. Scenes from the film play, then freeze as titles appear. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar as Murdoch. Lloyd Bridges as McCroskey. Peter Graves as Captain Over. Julie Haggerty as Elaine. Robert Hayes as Ted Stryker. Leslie Nielsen as Dr. Rumack. Lorna Patterson as Randy. Robert Stack as Kramer. Steven Stucker as Johnny. The inflatable autopilot's head rotates, then stops, grinning at us. And introducing Otto as himself. Opening credits continue. Set decorator Ann D. McCulley. Music by Elmer Bernstein. Film editor, Patrick Kennedy. Production designer, Ward Preston. Director of photography, Joseph Barak, ASC. Produced by John Davison. Written for the screen and directed by Jim Abrahams, David Zucker, Jerry Zucker. Credits continue to roll. Copyright 1980, Paramount Pictures Corporation. All rights reserved. Persons and events in this film are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons or events is unintentional. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. So there. Back in the loading zone, Ted's taxi still sits parked onto the curb. The man with thick black rimmed glasses checks his watch.
Well, I'll give him another 20 minutes. But that's it.
A logo appears. A snowy pyramid-shaped mountain stands under a cloud-strewn sky in the distance. Stars form an arch around the peak. White words appear as the mountain fades to a silhouette. Paramount, a Gulf and Western company.